Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome you. Today, Talk Back. No guest, no in-depth investigative report, rather empowering information. For example, how a healthy lifestyle during menopause may decrease your breast cancer risk later in life. The key to microflora is the key to balancing your health. For those who are using long-term aspirin to help prevent a stroke, well, it will lessen a stroke, but new information, it also increases vision loss. What can you do about it? And you think those ideas of those never events that your surgeon forgets something in your body? I'll tell you how often it actually happens. Also today, from Jeffrey Stout, about enzymes. We need to be consuming more enzymes to help our body's own enzymes to digest our food. And from Evelyn Pringle and Martha Rosenberg from Alternet, how our kids are getting hooked on pills. You know, the recent shooter was on psychiatric meds. The side effects of the meds included mania and psychotic episodes. That's two things that can cause you to hurt others and hurt yourself. Also today from John Falber and Ellen Gabler from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin Journal Sentinel newspaper, the doctors with links to drug companies are influencing the treatment. Okay, that means if a drug company gives your doctor money, the doctor then will suggest their drug. So, couldn't be that bad, could it? How many doctors are actually involved? The number is mind-blowing. Needless to say, we have a lot to share, but we're going to be taking your calls right up at the top of our program. Give us a call, our number anywhere in North America, including Canada, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, we have stations all over the world carrying this program. Our sister stations on Pacific RWBAI in New York, PFW in Washington, KPFK in Los Angeles. And we welcome all of you as well. Let's begin. One of the very first people that I spoke with when I was fortunate enough to have an opportunity to be on radio, on WMCA Radio. Before that, it was Balkan Echo Studios, WHBI. In New York, I did a program then called Writers Forum. New photographs, a treasure trove sent by people in this audience. Thank you. Over the last couple of months, I said that if you have photographs of any contact in the years that I've been on the air at lectures and sleepaways and runs in the park, whatever it might be, send them in. Well, about 3,000 photographs have been sent in. We selected just last week about 300 of those, and they're up on the web on GaryNull.com under photos. And one of the ones was with Brock Peters, the great American African-American actor, and Julie Newmar, all these other famous writers who you wouldn't necessarily know by looking at them. That was the first program I did. There was a woman who met me. She liked listening to the program, and she said, well, there's no one new in the world of health and nutrition, and I hope that you stick around in this field. I said, well, I hope to. Her name was Gloria Swanson. For a lot of young people, you may not know who she was. She was one of the founders of Hollywood. She, Charlie Chaplin, Douglas Fairbanks, a senior, Mary Pickford, his wife, and D.W. Griffith. Those were the ones who really created United Artists, and they were there at the beginning. Now, here she was. She was in her 70s, and she was very petite. And she came by the studio one day, and we were chatting, and I asked her, what is your secret to good health? And she said, enzymes. I said, how so? She said, every day that she has a fresh papaya smoothie. She'll take two papaya, throw them in a blender, and then she puts some food that is known to have rich enzymes in, like pineapple. And she said, that's terrific for you. She then put me in touch with a man who was very, very good gentleman, and he was her nutritionist, Gaylord Houser. So I got to meet all these great people. Now, here's what's interesting. They were at the end of their careers, some near the end of their lives. I was just beginning my career, my early 20s, so that I was there at this transition. Now, in other fields, you generally have a lot of people standing in the wings. I mean, just look at sports. Look at all the backup quarterbacks and all the positions in any sport. Look in Hollywood for any film. Publishers always have 10 writers for every manuscript or book. So they're never short of anyone. But in health and nutrition, there was no one. The only nationally syndicated radio program for about 25 years had been Carlton Fredericks. He insisted, by the way, that you call him Dr. Fredericks. And when I had lunch with him at his invitation, and he was sitting there drinking coffee, smoking a cigarette, he had sugar in his coffee, and he had some white bread sandwich with something on it, and I was having a baked potato with olive oil and a salad, and I asked him, sir, what's your doctorate in? He said, helping me in health. And I thought, helping you in health? Well, I didn't know what that meant. So when I got back and I started inquiring, I found out that his PhD was in public relations from New York University. So I inquired further, found out he had never had a course on health anywhere. So he was just, he created his own career. And, but he was like almost everyone else in the field of health at that time. None of them had classic educational background. Some of them were really terrific. Some had great knowledge. Pavlo Arola was one of my favorites. Dr. Christopher as well. Bob Hoffman. And Paul Bragg. In fact, many of you probably have seen Bragg's seasoning. And his daughter is still alive. He was a wonderful, cheerful person. A very outgoing personality. So I would go to these conferences, meet all of them. And the ones who were in the healthier way of living all emphasized enzymes. And it was through Gloria Swanson, who introduced me to Gaylord Houser, who then introduced me to Pavlo Arola. And he said, Gary, every day you got to have sauerkraut juice. You have to have your fermented vegetables. And we don't do that in the United States. In fact, nobody was eating that or drinking that. And he said, enzymes are the catalysts of life. They were right. Now, they would all die off. And for a long time, for, 35 years, there really hasn't been a national syndication in health and nutrition. This is still the program. There have been a lot of people, mainly what's called brokered programs. People buy their time, and mainly doctors and or chiropractors, or and they try to get people into their office. It's really about, come to my office and I'll heal you and bring a fat paycheck. Whole lot of difference than when I get into the field. I think about that sometimes, how fortunate I was to hear all the great stories of all these people. Unfortunately, none of them were really healthy. None of them exercised. None of them went out and ran. Paul Bragg did some swimming, and Bob Hoffman did some weightlifting, but no meditation, no yoga, no de-stressing. Almost all of them smoked. And that's unfortunate. And they all had a terrible diet. The worst diet I ever saw was the Del Davis's or Carlton Fredericks. Really, in my opinion, terrible diet. But people like them, and I could understand why. They were witty, and they were very gregarious and outgoing. So we come to this idea of enzymes. What we should appreciate is that enzymes in our diet are able to help us better absorb the fat-soluble nutrients and amino acids that our body uses to build new tissue. once you pass the age of about 30, your body is actually in an aging process. 27 is when we really begin the aging process in a serious way. And what happens is you no longer produce the same amount of enzymes that you did when you were younger. And therefore, supplementing with the right mixture of digestive enzymes as we get older can help us. The results, almost universally, you're going to have a smoother digestion, less gas, bloating, distension, constipation, a very much higher rate of absorption. So the actual nutrients in your food will be better absorbed, which is good. And a greater assimilation of the nutrients like vitamin K, D, and omega-3 fatty acids. Now, there is a counterpoint also that many digestive enzyme supplements contain specific amylases that facilitate the breakdown of starches too rapidly. So you don't want high-level amylases, A-M-Y, amylases, L-A-S-E-S's. The concern is that most people who are aging already have higher than desired blood sugar levels after they eat a meal. And so you don't want to have too much blood sugar because that'll contribute to heart disease, kidney damage, eye problems, and diabetes. So what we want then is we want a smooth digestion. So how do we do it? So we get better fiber digestion and fat digestion and protein digestion. We can also help substantially reduce esophageal reflux, which is an easy thing to do if we do it right. So let's review this in a moment here. Here are my issues with the problems of the American diet. 95% of the foods the average American consumes each day are not being properly absorbed into our bloodstream because they just lack enzymes. And when they're digesting calories and fats, but not what is essential. And without this breakdown of the food matrix, undigested waste passes into the colon where it can lead to bloating and gas and diarrhea and cramping. But even worse than these uncomfortable symptoms, poorly digested food contributes to the malnutrition that threatens so many people as they're over the age of 40. All right, so what then should we do? I suggest that we look at some simple, inexpensive enzymes, protein digesting enzymes called proteases. Proda, P-R-O-T-E, aces, A-S-E-S, proteases. Now, they're generally from the pancreas, which channels them into the small intestine via a short duct. And using supplemental proteases eases the burden on the body of producing these complex enzymes entirely on its own. And a lot of studies have shown that supplementation with proteases, you enhance digestion. And one important reason to supplement with proteases is to reduce the risk of intolerance reactions to foods like gluten from wheat and casein from milk. A lot of people have them. They shouldn't. They cause all kinds of problems. What do you think gluten does and casein does when it's in the intestine? It creates a glue, and that can make digestion much more difficult. Now, the structures of these food molecules make them relatively resistant to the limited enzymatic activity in the aging digestive tract. And when proteins arrive relatively undigested in the lower intestinal tract, they can trigger inflammation, and then you get this excessive mucus production and cramping and even bleeding. I'm going to suggest that probably one quarter of the American population are gluten intolerance or milk protein intolerance. So they, in particular, would need to make sure that they get their enzymes. Also, to help you break down the fat in our diet, you should be having lipases, L-I-P-A-S-E-S. These are enzymes that separate fats into individual fatty acids, and lipases promote normal fat digestion in people with pancreatic disease. And even if you don't suffer from an overt pancreatic disorder, you'll still benefit from lipase supplementation. One critical role of lipase enzyme is to facilitate absorption of vital fats, such as the omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D, vitamin K, lutein, and gamma-tocopherol, all from fat. And then you need fiber-digesting enzymes. A rapid release of sugar from starches produces the dangerous after-meal surge in blood glucose that damages the heart, muscle, and blood vessels. And most healthy individuals have no need for supplementing amylase. But if you have an elevated blood sugar, make sure you're getting amylase, A-M-Y-L-A-S-E, and that will help. So there's all kinds of others. There's trypsin, which breaks down whole proteins into shorter proteins. There's chymotrypsin, cellulase, which breaks down cellulose from the plant fibers, hemocellulase, and beta-glucanase. So get your enzymes. Now, we know that we should be consuming pumpkin. I would also suggest yams, sweet potatoes, turnips, kohlrabi, parsnips, squash. They're all good. They're rich in carotenoids. They're great in fiber. They have lots of good calcium and magnesium and potassium. They're really superfoods. But one that stands out a little more than the others in helping prevent cancer and helping lower your blood sugar, it's pumpkins. And at this time of year, when winter vegetables are real powerhouses, make sure that you're steaming pumpkin, make whatever sauce you want to put on it, and use it. In fact, there's an East China Normal University found that damaged pancreas cells regenerated more easily when pumpkin was consumed. The pumpkin extract ignited a boost in insulin levels, showing the possibility for the food to be beneficial for pre-diabetic and diabetic people. So it's a hard squash, an excellent source of zinc, vitamin A, and vitamin E, and it's anti-inflammatory and has low glycemic index. It's good for your heart. It's good for your blood. It's good for preventing muscles from cramping, especially in athletes, especially endurance athletes. Most endurance athletes will look for potassium from bananas. Pumpkin's better. In fact, a cup of pumpkins is 564 milligrams of potassium, and if you use the same amount of bananas, 400. So that's important to use. And then also we should look at microflora. Now, I believe that if every American had, including children, had some natural microflora each day, it would benefit all those good bacteria in our body and help rebalance from all the bad bacteria. Because every time you have sugar or alcohol or processed foods, pizza, a roll, a bagel, a donut, you're building bad bacteria and yeast. The good bacteria help displace those. When you understand, according to Dr. David Jockers, that the digestive tract is loaded. When I say loaded, I mean trillions of microorganisms that form a natural ecosystem, and that's what we call the gut flora. And we already know from this program how to have, juices from berries, like blueberry juice. Not a lot, small amount, 3 or 4 ounces. Pomegranate juice. All your berries, including tart cherries, one of the best. Pineapple juice. And that helps with a balance in the good versus bad bacteria. It also helps to turn off inflammation. These are all anti-inflammatory. And where you have chronic gut inflammation and you damage the gut lining, you're going to have pathogens proliferating. So the good bacteria from your diet produces good enzymes that metabolize protein into absorbable amino acids. So it's all good. The gut flora has two major arms. The first arm senses our environment by reading the environmental toxins that are coming into the body And when the environmental factors such as dust, chemicals, animal hair, and pollen fall onto the mucous membranes, the progenic bacteria sense and react to them. The second arm is responsible for immune activation and inflammation-based reactions. So when the first arm is damaged, the second arm begins to become hyperactive, which leads to autoimmune disease. Depending upon the genetic tendencies of the individual, this can result in asthma, allergies, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, Hashimoto's or Graves' thyroiditis, and fibromyalgia and Crohn's disease. Well, antibiotics, on the one hand, have saved countless lives. We shouldn't be simplistic. We should be realistic. There are times in life when the antibiotic or medical procedure could be life-saving. On the other hand, if it's overused or used when it hasn't been fully tested on an individual, especially children, for things like a cold, then it ends up that is viral-based. Then it ends up not only not helping the child with the cold, but it actually destroys the good bacteria, the gut flora, and allows a proliferation of the bad. That's all not good. Antibiotics are really devastating to your microbial balance. After a round of antibiotics, it'll take about 4 to 8 weeks to reestablish the gut. And this time period is an opportunity for parasites to establish themselves on the gut wall. So if you eat meat or dairy or poultry or fish products, you can be ending up, along with the antibiotics you've taken, you can end up with a really toxic intestine. Any foods that are high in sugar and processed carbohydrates increase the number and variety of different strains of candida in the body, and that promotes the growth of any parasitic worms in the gut. And medications of all type, including contraceptive pills and corticosteroids, are extremely hazardous to the gut flora. And dental fluoride treatments and fluoride-based toothpaste are damaged to the microbial flora. Chlorinated water is damaging also. What you want is you want coconut water, kefir, ginger tea, raw sauerkraut, kombucha, kimchi. I don't like the taste of it, but hundreds of millions of people use it every day, and it's terrific for them. You can develop a taste for it. They all help restore microbial balance. Fermented products are terrific for you. Just have them on a regular basis. And finally, before we go to our first calls, long-term aspirin use is dangerous. Yes, it will thin the blood, but it also causes bleeding. It will destroy folic acid, B6, B12, and vitamin C. And when those are limited and you have bleeding and extreme inflammation, you will raise an inflammatory dangerous marker called homocysteine. Most people have never heard of homocysteine, have never had it checked. You should. And if it's elevated, then you have to go on a homocysteine program to have it lowered. You could have a 200 to 300 greater chance of having a heart attack or stroke if your homocysteine is higher. But aspirin can create the very environment where you have more heart attacks even if you have less stroke. But now a new study that has just come out, done at the University of Wisconsin, published in the Journal of American Medical Association, shows that the aspirin uses also causes problems with macular degeneration, number one cause of blindness. So here's my suggestion. Consider the following. Increasing the amount of green vegetables and their juices in your diet, that'll thin the blood. Vitamin C, 5 to 10 times a day, that'll thin the blood, better than aspirin. But also helps kill cancer cells by stimulating a greater potency of the natural killer cells in our body, helps reduce inflammation and infections in our body, helps your skin, helps maintain blood sugar, and helps repair damage to the DNA. Also, vitamin E is a mix to tocopherol and tocotrienols, NADH, coenzyme Q10, all of these will naturally thin the blood, preventing stroke and helping you stay healthier in the long term. Also, diabetes remission is possible with diet and exercise, and this is a study that is a good study. It was done by this reported by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and when they took a look, they found that in a group of 4,500 individuals, that those who were able to exercise and eat a healthier diet were able to get rid of their diabetes. Finally, John Hopkins malpractice study. Let me quote this. This is from Johns Hopkins Medical Center. Quote, after a cautious and rigorous analysis of national malpractice claims, Johns Hopkins patients safety researchers estimate that a surgeon in the United States leaves a foreign object, such as a sponge or a towel, inside a patient's body after an operation 39 times a week, performs the wrong procedure on a patient 20 times a week, and operates on the wrong body site 20 times a week. This is all published in the peer-reviewed journal Surgery. 80,000 of these so-called never events that are never supposed to happen occurred in American hospitals. So we'd like to think that this doesn't happen. Indeed, it does. I was going to mention about healthy lifestyle during menopause, decreasing breast cancer. This is the University of Colorado Cancer Center. And here is what they write. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Research. Obese postmenopausal women are at a greater risk of developing breast cancer, and their cancers tend to be more aggressive than those in lean counterparts. Quote, by using nutrient tracers for fat and sugar, we track where the body stored excess calories. In lean models, excess fat and glucose was taken up by the liver, mammary and skeletal tissues. In obese models, excess fat and glucose was taken up by tumors, fueling their growth. In short, if you are lean, excess calories go to healthy tissue. If you are obese, excess calories feed the tumors. Quote, this implies that the menopausal window may be an opportunity for women to control their breast cancer risk through weight management, end quote. Well, that's good. So more reason to exercise and reduce your caloric intake. I'm Gary Nall. Time for your talk back. Let's go to the calls, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We're taking calls from the remainder of the program. Let's say hello to Johnny from Pennsylvania. Hi, Johnny.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Doing great, thank you.
Could you advise if I want to disinfect the nuts and seeds that I buy in bulk, because I don't know how long they've been stored, should I add overnight when I soak them a little bit of hydrogen peroxide or...
Not needed. First, what you do is you take just a small sample and just wash it for a second, then see if it's sweet. Sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds should be sweet, not bitter. If they're bitter, they're probably too old. But what you do with all nuts and seeds, you simply rinse them. That's all that's necessary. You don't have to soak them in anything. All right. All the best to you, Johnny. Al from Long Island. Hi, Al.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Al.
Gary, many times you stated that an important reason why you're a vegan is because you have compassion for animals.
Correct.
And I believe I also have compassion for animals. But at the same time, you also said that you keep beehives.
That's correct. I've been a beehive keeper since my very first farm.
Well, given the fact that one reason why the bees are dying off is because of their exploitation, they're being overworked and exploited, and given the fact that honey is the food that bees produce before the winter, I mean in the spring, for the hive, isn't it unethical for us to eat honey?
That depends. First, I don't use my bee honey. It's for them. I use the bees in the beautiful environments for them to pollinate. So pollination is the reason that we need bees. Without bees, about 30% of all the foods currently grown and sold and consumed would not be able to be used at all. Secondly, when you have bees that you don't move, meaning they're there 12 months a year, then there's no stress. As it is now, commercial beehives are completely different than organic beehives. For example, I'm in touch when I can. As a certified organic farmer and someone who teaches certified organic farming and conservation and environmental sciences, you get to meet other people and you share ideas. And it is when the commercial hives are transferred, let's say, from the East Coast and they're taken out to California for the almonds, where there are thousands upon thousands of hives will be put through the almond areas, and the stress of that trip going out there, and then they're fed a sugar solution, and then the pollination occurs, but any honey that's taken is not given back to them. And then they spray the almond trees, or if it's someplace else, they'll spray the apple trees upstate, and or they'll spray the orange trees, and otherwise they'd be getting orange blossom honey from the orange blossoms. And the sprays they're using and the genetic alterations in that spray on the plant and it going into the plant, the spray going into the plant, and then becoming a part of the actual sap of the plant is killing the bees. That's why you have colony collapse. You have a combination of three things: a particular type of spray, a genetic engineering of the spray and the plant itself, and the high levels of stress of commercial bees. But a natural beekeeper does none of the above. There's no sprays used. There's no moving them. And you're always making sure that the hive has plenty of honey. In fact, at this time to the rest of the year, I will put plates at about 6 feet above ground. It's a simple ceramic plate, like a bowl, with honey in it, for the bees in case there's any time where they don't have enough. Now, I've had just one hive alone that has been producing for 16 years. Just one hive I'm talking about. I've got 40 hives, but that's what happens when your bees are healthy. Now, I have over 5,000 palm trees. I have probably 10 to 15,000 other flowering and shrubs and plants. And so depending upon what they're using, they'll create a palm honey or an orange honey, because I have orange trees, or lemon trees. And they fertilize all that, which means that the trees are extraordinarily healthy. The shrubs are healthy. In fact, this year, I haven't been home in a long time. I'm going home in a couple of weeks for a two-month rest at home. I still do my daily radio show because I have a studio in my home, but I have to get back. I've got a very big spring coming. A lot of good things are happening. But I'm always just blown away by how many crops of food I get each year from what I planted. For example, I've gotten four different growths of cherries. Up north, you get one. In the Pacific Northwest, you get one. In Michigan, where a lot of cherries come from, you get one. I get four. I get figs 3 times a year, bananas 2 to 3 times a year. And that wouldn't be possible without the pollination and by trimming back the trees. That's also something that people who are not experienced don't know anything about the process. You have a beautiful tree. Now, you can see these trees. You can see the fruit that I grow. You can see the garden that I have because it's there to teach people. For example, you'll see my daughter, Shelley, and she's in front of wood chips, it looks like. But it's actually palm fronds that have dried up, and after they dry up, they're cut down, and then they're shred. They're shred in this machine. It's a small machine. You push it through, and it goes, and suddenly comes out as a mulch. And then that goes into a pile, and you put a cover on it, and in about 3 months, that breaks down until you have rich soil. So I show you each photograph is a different level until you get to the soil, and then the soil is what you use, full of microorganisms and worms, and that's what you used to grow your next crops. And you'll see sprouts, and you'll see an empty row, and then 6 weeks later, you see it filled with different foods, all using my own input. I like to invent different ways of planting and growing, and even putting a 30% shade cloth. That way, I can grow right through the summer. And trouble is, in my town where I live, there's no real health community. I wish there were, but there's not. I've even gone to the people there and said, "Hey, I'm willing to let you use my garden to grow stuff for yourself and for others and for the poor." Oh, great idea. Never once have done it. Never once. So after a certain period of time, you start to realize, you know, that these people are into lifestyle that is pleasant and beautiful, but not into healthy living. And I never see that many healthy people. In fact, I don't see any healthy people where I live. But that's all right. I stick to myself. I don't socialize. I prefer when I go there not to have to answer 16,000 questions, which is what happens here in New York. If you ever come by the office, including on a Sunday, you'll see what I'm talking about. So there I just am with nature, the animals, the bees. And the bees are flourishing. They're extremely healthy. And if you don't take the honey, then what will happen is if you have so much honey in a hive, the bees will swarm and create another hive. So once you know about getting honey, and you'll know that the reason that you want the bees is for pollination, but it also is perfectly acceptable to take some of the overflow and use it for yourself, your own family needs. No problem with that at all. Don't be reasonable, but not radical, Al. Okay? Is the rest of your life perfect, Al? Are you happy?
You know what I do in the morning?
I know what you do, but you can't sit on the radio. We'll get bleeped out. But that's all right. You keep doing it and put some honey on afterwards. It'll keep it from burning. Let's say hello to our next caller. Al's got way too much time on his hands out there. Luann, hi.
I tell you what. All right. That's enough of that. Oh, boy. Okay, I got a couple of emails here. One is from someone who said that he was in your office and he heard someone asking about where the Coco Magic Bars were from the last BAI, the fundraiser. And a staff member said that they had been sitting there for 3 months. And his question is, why in the heck is this happening? And if they're sitting there, why can't you just mail them out?
All right. They are sitting in our office, and they're sitting there because the station management has not come up and picked them up, even though I have repeatedly emailed and asked them and left messages to please come and pick it up so they can get this sent out to the people. There's a time where you have to kind of stop exploiting a disaster like Sandy disaster to raise money and just get to honoring the people and their pledges. You know, there's a time where you just have to realize if you don't do it the right way, it'll cost you the next drive. And I just can't get that through anyone's head. I wished I could. I wish there was a simple explanation because in the real world, we're held to certain standards. In the non-commercial radio world, they just make up the rules as if somehow they're not responsible. You got to be responsible. So let's hope that people, you know, get this message and say, go and pick them up. Get them out to us. All right? Otherwise, I'm just going to ask people who can show that they have paid for them to come by and pick them up themselves. Maybe that's the best thing to do. Go ahead. Next question.
Okay. I have Brian here from North Carolina, and he says, I look forward to hearing your reviews of some of the films that you like. And he said, in the last 5 years, I've been listening to you, and you have never had a wrong pick, in his opinion. Can you give me your top films of the year?
Beasts of the Southern Wild would be my first choice for the whole year. That, I think, was just, it was simply perfection at every level, in the writing, directing, the acting, and the theme of the film. And it's actually a small film. All the films I really like were small films. That is just one of those films, when you walk out of it, you just go, wow, what did I just see? And it's just a wonderful experience. I would also say Amour would be an outstanding film, a character film. Not a feel-good film, but a brilliantly done film at every level. Again, these are all art films. My favorite films of the year were, with the exception of James Bond, I thought it was a terrific film for what it was. They were all fun. I haven't seen some of the newer ones. The Sessions, about a man who has polio and therefore is limited in what he can do, and has a sexual surrogate work with him. Wonderful film, beautifully done, lots of humor in it. That would be right up at my top of my list. Now, what I'll do is this. I'll make a list of about 15 films, and I'll share them with you on the last day of the year, because a lot of these, I believe, will be getting nominated for Academy Award, and therefore people can go to Netflix or back into the theaters and rent them or go and watch them. All right?
Very good.
Okay. What else?
I have something here from Celia. She doesn't say where she's from, but she says, excuse me, she says, I heard about this supersizing foods was bad. She saw this program called Man Versus Food, and she says it's like a train wreck in progress. All these shows promote a slow death. She says, I do want to thank you and your daughter, Shelley. She said, 2 weeks ago, I came in from Brooklyn to get the discounted grains, you know, how you were selling the bulk grains there for a while. She said, I commented to Shelley that people like me on Social Security, they're on a very tight budget, and we really have to make our budget stretch, and this opportunity that you gave us was wonderful. So she gave me a big hug, and she said, just stay right here. She went in the back or downstairs, and she came up with this huge sandwich. She said, and yet the price was the very same as any of the sandwiches were. And she commented how thoughtful and kind she was. So she's commenting here. I'm going to ask you. I mean, I've had some of Shelley's sandwiches, and they are outstanding, and they are delicious and filling. But you know how sometimes when you have a meal, you have a big sandwich or something like that, you get like sleepy and dopey. Well, you get tons of energy when you eat your sandwiches. So I want to ask you, when you supersize a sandwich, is it healthy, and why would we want to supersize sandwiches?
Okay, let's put this. We have to break this question and issue into sections. I've been referring to the supersize portions on cooking shows that are extraordinarily unhealthy. That the food is unhealthy. The amount of animal proteins and animal fats and sugars, very unhealthy. But then how they're prepared, deep fried in oils, loading them up with saturated fats and trans fats, all pro-inflammatory. And then the quantity of the protein in the fat, and sometimes 5 pounds of food, 6 pounds of food for a single person in a given meal. And then others eating very large servings. In fact, virtually all the restaurants around the United States that are known for having some get your name on a plaque on the wall if you're able to eat a certain gigantic amount of something. The normal portions in those places are humongous, all bad. What my daughter did of her own volition, because it's just her nature, she supersized sandwiches, not just for that woman, but for everyone, but in a good way. So what she did was put large tomato slices, large raw onion slices, large amounts of, like a whole handful of sprouts and microgreens. And that's what is supersized. And all that is very healthy. To the contrary, the more that you get, the better it is. The more onion you eat, the thinner your blood. The more parasites you kill, the more viruses and bacteria you kill, the better it is for your throat, the gastrointestinal system, and the natural aggregation of platelets is reduced, which means less chance of a stroke. With tomatoes, the more tomato you get, instead of a little tiny piece, and this is all organic, you're going to get more of the lycopene and other polyphenols that are in the tomato, which is actually in the fruit family, not the vegetable family. And then just imagine how good it is for you to get all of the chlorophyll and phytochemicals from microgreens and sprouts. You get a handful of sunflower sprouts or fenugreek sprouts. That's terrific for you. Most people eat too little microgreens, too little onion, too little tomato, and too little of the nutrients that are in the sprout family. So that's the supersizing. So it's big, but it's not fattening. It's not bad. It's all good. No? And that was her own choice. By the way, I found I took a break this afternoon for a moment. I was watching a video that someone had sent us. We must have about 40 dance party videos over the years. This was 1987. And Shelley was in it in this beautiful purple dress dancing. And this has got some of the best dancing from people in this audience I have ever seen. It was done at a huge nightclub here in New York. I think it was called 1040. And there were about 3,000 or 4,000 people there that night. And there was a dirty dancing contest that Virginia Reed judged. And you got to see all the people dancing. And smiling, and it was just wonderful to see so many happy people having such a great time, and some really outrageous outfits and dance moves that they had. So I'm going to put that up tomorrow so people will be able to see that. Keep sending in the old films you got or photographs. Love to put them up so people can see themselves at different times in life.
Well, now, Gary, my question is this. Is there footage of you doing dirty dancing? Because you redefine the entire genre of dirty dancing when you get out there. Well, I've seen you dance.
Yeah, I'm in some of them. I much prefer watching other people, but I love the music. I enjoyed the music. I enjoyed the energy of the people because there's no drinking, smoking, or drugs. People are there to have a great time. And in fact, I was so inspired by what I saw. Tomorrow I'm going to ask someone on my staff to try to rent a place before I go back home to have another dance party for the audience. So I'm going to try to do one to celebrate some new books coming out and just to celebrate bringing happy people together to share a positive evening. Luann, hold on. We're going to take some calls from people in the audience. Again, our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Nice to hear from you. I promised that I would do two other issues. One was doctors with links to drug companies influence treatment guidelines. And this is from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin Journal Sentinel. I'll quote it. It says, doctors with financial ties to drug companies have heavily influenced treatment guidelines recommending the most lucrative drugs in American medicine. An analysis by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and MedPage Today has found. The guidelines affect how many doctors across the country treat patients for everything from diabetes to asthma to chronic pain to depression to high cholesterol. Issued by leading medical associations and governmental institutions, treatment guidelines are supposed to be based upon rigorous science. But the committees that write them have been dominated by doctors who have worked as paid speakers, consultants, or advisors for companies selling the recommended drugs. Critics say the financial relationships have corrupted medicine, resulting in cases where guidelines make dangerous or ineffective recommendations. Drug companies and some doctors counter that those with conflicts are often top experts in their field. The journal Sentinel examined 20 clinical practice guidelines for conditions treated by 25 top-selling drugs in the United States. The drugs sit in the medicine cabinets of millions of Americans. Nexium for acid reflux, Lipitor for high cholesterol, Cymbalta for depression, OxyContin for pain. Their collective sales were $94 billion. And then it goes into this. Now listen carefully. This is what's just shocking. 9 guidelines were written by panels where 80% of the doctors had financial ties to the drug companies. And 4 drug panels didn't even require doctors to disclose any conflicts of interest. And of the 16 drug panels that did, 66% of the doctors on the panel had ties to drug companies with gross conflict. And then it goes on to talk about how many doctors are involved. It's tremendous. It's over 166,000 doctors. And it goes on to talk about how, quote, we reported, revealed articles in medical journals that were ghostwritten by drug company marketers, instructional videos for doctors that made misleading claims about drugs, payments to medical organizations that advocated for more use of drugs, and drug companies paying for continuing medical education courses that, in essence, market their products. Quote, at the end of the day, the drug companies own medicine. And that's according to associate professor at Harvard Medical School, Eric Campbell, whose research, the conflicts of interest and treatment guidelines, quote, we created a system that allows us. So what's this mean to all of us listening right now? It means that there's a very high probability that whatever treatment your doctor is recommending is based upon someone having made money and therefore gotten in a place where they could convince you that you need a drug without looking at any of the natural, non-toxic alternatives or even other drugs that would be less risky for you. As a result, the number one cause of death in the United States each year is not heart attack, stroke, or cancer, or diabetes. It's American medicine itself. And the number one cause of injury is American medicine. All this is documented in a very meticulously, a scientifically referenced report called Death by Medicine that's on our website. And yet we sent this to 7,000 members of the American media, every major medical organization, every member of Congress, every governor, every one of the 5,000-plus state legislators, and not a single person responded. Not one. So there are high costs, including death and suffering, when you're given a series of drugs because someone paid doctors to go out there and chill and pimp for them. And that's chemotherapy, it's psychiatric meds, it's heart meds, it's all the cancer meds, all these different meds. It's a fraud. The whole field of medicine has been corrupted at every level and should be completely transformed. It's beyond redemption. Those are my thoughts. I'm looking at the clock. We're out of time. I thank you all for taking your time and calling in and sharing your thoughts and listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.